Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Health Integration Specialist Lena Berman, and I come to you weekly to discuss self-care and integrated health. Is food medicine? Think you have a handle on nutrition? What if what we need from our diet is present in the whole foods we find in our environment, and nutrient deficiencies enable our genetic weaknesses to present an illness? It might mean that our nutritional needs are somewhat determined by our family and ethnic history, even if we are a mix of bloodlines. I first heard about the work of Dr. Oji Agbe when my friend Claire Felix shared her excitement about her newest edition of the Felix Letter, a commentary on nutrition, which contains information about substances found in foods native to African and West Indian diets, which prevent and reverse the presentation of sickle cell in individuals with that genetic inheritance. In other words, people who carry the trait for sickle cell anemia. Today I'll be interviewing biochemist and nutritionist Dr. Oji Agbe about his research into natural dietary solutions to sickle cell anemia. So let me welcome my guest, Dr. Agbe. Are you there?
Yes.
Thank you for joining us. Incidentally, for those of you who need to know, Dr. Agbai's name is spelled A-G-B-A-I, A-G-B-A-I, pronounced Agbai. Dr. Agbai is administrator and research scientist at the Biomedical Research Institute, Incorporated, a biochemist, nutritionist, and naturopath. His research on thiocyanate as an anti-sickler grew from his observation that sickle cell anemia is mild among his own people, the Igbo of West Africa, as well as other ethnic groups whose diets are rich in nutritional thiocyanate. Formerly a professor of chemistry at University of Arkansas, he now lectures on his work in the laboratory and clinical investigations, as well as maintaining services to his own clients through the Biomedical Research Institute in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So welcome to you. I'm very grateful that you took the time to do the show.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you betcha. Dr. Agbai, are Africans the only group who inherit this trait for sickle cell anemia?
No, not at all. Actually, the highest incidence of sickle cell trait occurs in Greece, Athens, Greece, with 49.1% of the Greek population in Athens who have the sickle cell trait. And Africa has only about 20 to 25% trait. Other places where sickle cell anemia occurs is Saudi Arabia with about 20%. And then they actually, as far as the number of people who suffer from this condition, India, southern part of India with such a teeming population, southern part of India alone has more sickle cell than the whole of Africa combined. Mm. So it's not just something that has to do with Africa. It's really occurs in all races.
Why don't you go ahead and describe what's happening in the blood of patients, in the blood cells, when the trait presents and how this leads to an anemic condition?
Yes, what happens is the condition arises from a genetic mutation, that is a change in the gene that makes it possible for people who have this condition to make a different kind of hemoglobin called a hemoglobin S. And the hemoglobin S differs from normal hemoglobin, hemoglobin A, by having only one little change, an amino acid called valine, in place of glutamic acid, which is a normal constituent of that position 6. So what happens is because of this change, the hemoglobin S tends to form crystals called mnemonic plaquettes. And these crystals are what cause the cells to sickle, to have the abnormal shape we call sickle cells seen under the microscope. So because of those abnormal shapes, these kind of cells, they are very fragile. They don't last very long in the blood. Usually, the normal red blood cells should live about 120 days in the blood. But the sickle cells, because of their abnormal shape, they usually last only about 2 weeks or so, and they are destroyed. So there is a rapid loss of blood, red blood cells, in sickle cell anemia, and the patient is not able to keep up with production of red blood cells, so that's why they're anemic.
And on top of that, another thing that people don't realize is that red blood cells line up one after another in line to get through the blood vessels, and when they sickle, they sort of gum up the works, huh?
Yes, exactly. They block the blood vessels. As a result of that, the blood is not reaching the vital organs, and that's when they get into sickle cell crisis, when the blood cells, the sickle cells block the blood vessels, then the patient experiences pain because the blood cells have stopped blood flow to the organs, and as a result of that, there is necrosis. In other words, there's a lack of blood to different organs, and the patients start to experience pain. That's when they go into what is usually described as a sickle cell crisis.
In addition, they often will have a stroke, and this can occur in very, very young children, which is part of what's so heartbreaking about this disease. How is sickle cell anemia usually diagnosed? Do people get tested to find out if they have the trait, if they're in a genetic line that may be predisposed, or do people just wait until there's a crisis?
No, actually, usually in the U.S., there was a very important publication way back in 1987 where the NIH recommends that every single child born in America, irrespective of race, should be tested for sickle cell. And the reason they're doing that is because they found out that sickle cell is not restricted to anyone's single race. It's very universal. So the way it's diagnosed is usually at birth, there is it's a part of the prenatal, it's a part of the screening for newborns where they test and determine what condition the newborn child is. So the sickle cell screening is a part of it in more than 30 states in the United States. It's being done now. So it's usually diagnosed at time of birth. And for those who do not, who were not screened at birth, usually, when they start showing some symptoms, so when they visit a clinic, then it's usually met at that time. But ordinarily, in the United States, up to 30 states are diagnosing the condition at time of birth, and so they usually immediately after doing that, they try to do something to help the newborn.
And what do they do?
Well, yes, one of the main reasons why they actually started doing this screening is to institute what they call prophylactic penicillin. Where they give them penicillin to try to prevent pneumococcal infection. And they have been doing that, and unfortunately, that kind of condition brings about bacterial resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Where the client who is giving that penicillin starts to have a resistance. In other words, the bacteria destroyed the penicillin, and so it becomes worthless. It doesn't help them anymore.
Yeah, so they become resistant to other antibiotics that are
exactly.
in the same family as penicillin, which is very serious because children can get real infections when they're very young, like strep throat or something, where it might be handy to be able to use it. And these kids are bombarded with antibiotics, to say nothing of what it does to their gut health and the health of their system to have this sort of thing happening so young. Do I understand correctly that you are more likely to carry the trait or have the trait as a predisposition to actually having the disease present if both parents carry the trait? Are you less, are you less in danger if only one parent is carrying it?
Right, exactly. If two parents, both parents, father and mother, if both of them are carriers, in other words, they are trait carriers, you have a 25% chance of having a sickle cell anemia child. But if it's only one parent who is a carrier and then the other parent is normal, in that case, you don't even have any chance at all because you can get a trait in the child, in the offspring, but you cannot get someone who is a sickle cell anemia in that condition because it's a it's a a recessive trait. In other words, it's a homozygous recessive trait. Homozygous recessive trait.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it takes both parents to carry and to be carriers,
mm-hmm.
For you to get a sickle cell child, sickle cell anemia child. But if it's only one parent, you can only get another trait. You cannot get someone who has the disease.
In her newsletter, which is the newest newsletter that Clara has done, she points out that there are published papers from as far back as 1931 describing the effects of researchers and doctors sort of stumbled on giving a patient potassium sulfurocyanide. I'm going to say it wrong.
Sulfurocyanide. That's all right.
Which is very similar to thiocyanate as a remarkably effective treatment for sickle cell anemia. And yet, as we see over and over again, this thing is like right in front of everyone's faces. It's the simplest thing, and yet the medical profession has continued to use very toxic and invasive treatments to treat, as we've said, very young children who present. Now, we've been going over some of the usual treatments for sickle cell patients, and we've talked about how it's diagnosed. But just to give people some idea, I mean, what I understand is from your book, which incidentally is called, actually, I don't have it right in front of me.
Sickle cell anemia, a solution at last.
Yes, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Sickle cell anemia. And we will explain how to get hold of that book during the show. That they're using really nasty sort of stuff like chemotherapy and all kinds of things. And in fact, really, they just don't know what to do for sickle cell patients. What's interesting is that you just recently did a presentation to the 27th Annual Conference of the Sickle Cell Disease Association of America in Cleveland, Ohio. This was in September of 99. What kind of reception did you get?
Oh, yes. Very great reception. After my presentation, there were a lot of clients who have been using the diet to control their condition. In other words, people came out, took the microphone, and told the whole audience how well they have been liberated from sickle cell crisis, how they have been liberated from infections. In other words, their condition has become so mild that they don't require any kind of hospitalizations or anything like that. And that's the major thing that happened. In the abstract to that presentation, we mentioned the fact that we have done extensive work in the area of sickle cell anemia control, and we have used electron microscopy to show that the cells that are treated with thiocyanate, they don't sickle anymore. And that is why the patients are able to build their own blood, because when the cells don't sickle, these red blood cells live the normal lifespan of 120 days, like any normal person, I mean, like any normal blood, so that the sickling process that causes the destruction of the red blood cells has been stopped. Also, the clogging of the blood vessel by the sickle cell has been stopped, so the patient no longer have crisis. And we documented in that abstract of the presentation the fact that when we started way back in 1990, we have consistently observed clients who have been using this product for a period of 9 years who never, ever went into crisis. So that was the positive part of it. And a former director of the Sickle Cell Association of America, he asked a very important question. If it was very, very important, because he said that that I'm showing the fact that clients are getting their blood built in a very, very rapid manner, which is true, that sort of thing can cause crisis. If he had said it in a positive way, that would have been a very, very good question, but he said it more or less, it was a negative approach.
Yeah, what he was doing was challenging you that if the hemoglobin builds up too fast,
yes,
that can cause a crisis.
Exactly. But he intended to kind of knock me down with that sort of question, but it turned out to be the fact, when I answered his question and told him that even though the blood is being built very rapidly, at the same time, the same agent that is thiocyanate is also a vasodilator. In other words, it dilates the blood vessel.
Mm-hmm.
And because it dilates the blood vessel, so the clogging of the cells, of the blood vessel by the sickle cell does not happen anymore because the cells can now pass through very freely in those vessels because the vessel is wider than it was before. And at the same time, the cells that are passing through those vessels are not sickled. They have been transformed to the unsickled one that doesn't clog the vessels. And so as soon as I answered that question, and also I pointed out to him the fact that in our own experience, using thiocyanate to help clients, they don't go into crisis. I also pointed out the fact that in 1932, when the paper was published showing that it was actually used to stop two cases of crisis, so I told him the fact that there was no crisis involved at all. In fact, it stopped crisis. So as soon as I explained to him the fact that it was widening the blood vessel and it's not causing any crisis, he didn't have any other thing to say other than he just sat down and he shut up. He couldn't do anything further.
I wish I had seen that.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, and I have by phone with me today Dr. Oji Agbai, who is a nutritionist and a biochemist and a naturopath, and we are discussing his book and his research on the use of thiocyanate-containing foods to treat sickle cell anemia. His book is called Sickle Cell Anemia, A Solution at Last, and we will explain how to get this book as we get close to the half-hour mark. I'll explain how you can get a copy of the research. The foods that are high in thiocyanate are normally eaten by people who are of African descent, and also they occur a lot in places like India. Why don't you go over which foods are the highest in thiocyanates?
Yes, the highest food containing thiocyanate is the African yam. Now, remember, this is not the American yam. This is the tropical yam, African yam. It's a richest source of preformed. In other words, thiocyanate is already present in its original, in its final state. Then the cassava is another tuber, another root crop from Africa and the Caribbean and South America. It's also another rich source. But in case of cassava, it has to be processed to make it edible. Whereas the yam does not have to, it doesn't require any kind of processing. You can just cook the yam like you can cook the Irish potato. You can just boil it or bake it or anything you can do to the potato. So in that case, it has the largest amount that is available to the body. Cassava has to go through a process of refining, processing to make it edible. So you lose quite a bit of the thiocyanate in the process. Also, you have millet, which is a grain, very, very nutritious grain. It's another good source. Sorghum is another good source of
sweetening. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. All those mainly are African origin. But also in America, you can get it in carrots, in cabbage, in lima beans, in
I have cauliflower and broccoli.
Broccoli. Yes.
Peaches, plums, macadamia
yes.
nuts,
exactly.
lentils, and then flaxseed, which makes Clara very happy because that's one of her favorite substances.
Yes, flaxseed. Exactly.
But is it as bioavailable in those other forms as it is in the yam and the cassava?
Yes, it's equally bioavailable. It's just that the concentration is higher in the yam.
In the yam.
And cassava.
Now, even people who live in very cosmopolitan areas may still have trouble going into a produce store and asking for. Is this the same yam that Dioscorea comes from?
Yeah, actually, that's the name. That's the botanical name. It's Dioscorea.
Uh huh.
Yes.
Because there are people are producing products, with that stuff in it. But I'm wondering what happened because what you've discovered is, it was so obvious. Here you are, you're looking at people who are from African countries or who are transplanted African cultures, like in the West Indies, who eat these tubers in their diet on a regular basis during the day. And then they move to the United States and they have a sickle cell crisis. They move back to their native country and it goes away. So
exactly.
It's really obvious that you can do this just by eating these foods. You know,
right.
You don't have to take a pill.
Uh-huh.
But you did discover that these foods have to be eaten 3 times a day. It's not enough to just take a... In other words, it sounds as though just making a pill or processing this, it may be useful in situations where you have to add more, but it seems to me that it's very important to get it from natural food, no?
Yeah, exactly. That is very true. And the story you told about people who moved away from their country, there's a very important case, a West African lady. She was 33, and she came from Nigeria. She was 33 when she was in Nigeria, and from an area they call Port Harcourt. Okay, so she did not even know that she had any threat of sickle cell anemia until she came to Little Rock, Arkansas. I mean, the sickle cell is diagnosed at the age of 6 months. That's when you start to show some symptoms. But this lady was 33. Did not have any symptoms until she came to Little Rock when she was 33. And after being in Little Rock for 6 months, she went into a severe crisis and was rushed to the hospital. And then it was diagnosed that she had sickle cell. So that's how dramatic it is. And we have seen similar cases where Jamaicans, when they remain in Jamaica.
Yeah, Jamaicans, huh?
Yeah. When they remain in Jamaica, they have mild or pretty asymptomatic state of sickle cell. They come to the United States, live here a few months. They go into crisis, and then they go back. When they go back to Jamaica, they don't even they regain their health again without any
mm-hmm.
treatment of any kind, just by eating mm-hmm. the food. So published way back in 1968 by Dr. Sargent, they said that sickle cell anemia is very mild in Jamaica. They did not know why. So it's only after this research, Dr. Houston. Robert Houston was one of the first authors who described this condition where Jamaicans come to the U.S. and they start having crisis and they go back, they get well again. But that was published in by Dr. Sargent way back in 1968, and it's only explained after in the paper of Dr. Houston,
mm-hmm.
who uncovered it, and then I have similar observations for the Africans who had a similar experience. So
this is a wonderful example again of why nutrition is such a complicated topic and why it's so confusing, because we're not only talking here about the necessity for having a certain level of certain kinds of starches in the diet that contain these phytonutrients, but these are, if people are going to eat, I have noticed that in general, especially in the United States, we're having a crisis here with diabetes going through the roof. These are diseases and high blood pressure. These are diseases that affect people of African descent. They're affecting Europeans. There's carbohydrate sensitivity, insulin resistance, hormonal changes. So it isn't always the case that all people need to avoid starches, but it is the case that sometimes the starches that they choose have to be extremely nutrient dense. And we're seeing here not only nutrient dense, but these are foods that contain this substance, thiocyanate. Now, that said, you know, I'm noticing the article you gave me about Oshita Henry, the little boy.
Yes,
and you know, this is a very complicated situation. He was very sick, and his parents had to get him to eat these foods. And it was complicated because this is a little boy, and he wants to eat garbage. He wants the refined, horrible. So she's talking about making waffles from buckwheat and quinoa, which have thiocyanates in them, and figuring in different ways of getting in these foods. You know, one of the worst things that's happened in this country with the inception of industrial agriculture is this business of shipping wheat, you know, processed grain products to countries like Africa, and encouraging and populations, you know, like that, and encouraging them to eat these grains, which are completely inappropriate proteins for them. I mean, inappropriate carbohydrates for them.
Exactly.
The one thing I wanted to ask you though is, in the spirit of people are very different, thiocyanate has to be balanced with other foods. It has to be eaten properly because there are substances in thiocyanates, and I heard about this years ago, like in millet, that are thyroid suppressant.
Right.
So if you're dealing with someone who has a thyroid disease and you know, even though thiocyanate has other protective properties, it's an antimicrobial and stuff, these foods have to be prepared and balanced properly. You want to talk about that?
Exactly. Yes, that is very true. High levels of thiocyanate could be goitrogen. It could be affecting the thyroid gland.
They're goitrogens, yes,
yeah.
As soy is too.
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Especially if the foods are grown in iodine deficient soil. So we recommend in using these foods that you should eat them with iodized salt. It doesn't mean to add more salt. It's just that whenever you cook or eat any of this thiocyanate-containing food, that you should use iodized salt as opposed to non-iodized salt. And then in our supplements called Diascovite, which is a derivative of the it's a yam extract.
So you are supplementing with a supplement which has thiocyanate in it as well?
Right, yes. Okay. We have a supplement that contains thiocyanate. That supplement is iodized also, in other words, to make sure that you have a balanced amount of iodine that will make sure that thiocyanate, high concentration of thiocyanate, does not cause any problem in the thyroid gland.
Now this would mostly be a concern, I would think, even if it's balanced, for someone who has antibodies attacking their thyroid, who has thyroiditis, because you're trying to suppress thyroid function. But I would think that thiocyanate foods might be a treatment for Graves' disease and hyperthyroidism. Has anybody looked into that?
That is interesting.
Because there are people of African descent who are very vulnerable to hyperthyroidism in this country. And I'm wondering, is this also linked to a lack of thiocyanate foods?
That is quite interesting. Yes, we haven't specifically looked at that, but that's a very, very interesting possibility to use that to counter hyperthyroidism.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yes.
So I noticed that you also emphasize that you must balance these carbohydrates with protein because of the sulfur-containing amino acids.
Exactly.
The iodine and also B6, huh?
Exactly. That's very true. The food needs to be the thiocyanate-containing foods need to be balanced with protein because the body uses sulfur to make immunoglobulin, to make antibodies.
Mm-hmm.
Make it simple, to make antibodies. So when you provide the body with protein foods that will supply the necessary
sulfur-containing aminos.
Containing that, like methionine.
Methionine.
So
cysteine.
And cysteine. Mm-hmm. When you supply those, then the body will have abundance of sulfur to make both thiocyanate as well as to make the antibodies necessary to protect you from infections.
Okay.
Right.
We're going to have to take just a little break, and when we come back, we're going to finish talking with Dr. Agbe about the thiocyanate containing food. Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, and I am on the phone with Dr. Oji Agbe, who is a biochemist, a nutritionist, and a naturopath, and a researcher who is treating sickle cell patients with high thiocyanate foods, which are native to countries like India and Africa and the West Indies. When these foods are removed from the diet, people with sickle cell trait start to present with the disease. Now, this is one of those things that's right under your nose, and it's been ignored by the medical profession. And I'm not trying to criticize Western medicine. I'm just saying that it's just one of the lacks in Western medicine is this attention to the obvious. Now, you, I know, are, like many people who are steeped in science, have a deeply spiritual sense of the way things are organized. And one of the things that's really interesting and amazing about sickle cell is that it isn't there for no reason. It appears in cultures where there is also a danger from malaria. And do you want to explain how this works, how sickle cell protects people from malaria?
Yes. This is very important. The sickle cells are protective for malaria because when the malaria parasite goes into the red blood cells, the cells that sickle, they form crystals. And these crystals are very sharp, like needles. They just pierce, physically pierce the malaria parasite and kill them physically.
Kills the parasites.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Kill the parasite. Mm-hmm. And so that's a protection. That's the most natural protection against malaria. And we know malaria is very deadly.
It really is.
Very deadly. And so sickle cell really arose. God designed sickle cell to protect humans from deadly malaria. At the same time, he provided the nutritional thiocyanate to protect those individuals from sickle cell anemia.
And what's interesting is the little article that you sent me about how people have learned through folk tales and passing down information not to eat the high thiocyanate foods during certain periods of the year.
Right.
When they're ripening, in fact, they still have learned not to eat them for a short period of time so that they will have sickling cells for a short period of time to protect them from malaria.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a very important cultural fact that is ongoing at this point. They call it a period of scarcity when the yam is scarce, and people, even though the yam is ripening in the field, people are advised not to take the yam. You know, it's a cultural taboo, more or less, against eating the yam at a certain time of the year. During the rainy season, and of course during the rainy season, that's when there's a lot of water, and that's when there's a lot of mosquitoes, and then mosquitoes carry the malaria. So during that time, people don't. According to the culture, most West African cultures where the yam is, they are advised not to take the yam, to eat the yam at that time. And so during that time, the cells are allowed to sickle, and so when they sickle, they protect them from malaria.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's just a wonderful
sense of balance.
Cultural balance, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, a reminder to people, if you miss part of today's show and you want to get a cassette copy of it, you can always call my information number at 707-773-4727, or you can go to the website, and I will post on the website information that I'm about to give out right now about how to get these books. I will post this on the tape list on the website. The website, you delete www, and you type in members.aol.com/, and then it's YOHAF, Your Own Health and Fitness, YOHAF. Now, the people who are interested can get a copy of Dr. Ogbe's book, For Sickle Cell Anemia, Solution at Last. And I'll give out the address. It's $25 to Natural Health Research Institute. Natural Health Research Institute. And the address is 2010, so it's 2010, South Nogales, Nogales, Nogales Avenue, Tulsa, Oklahoma, 74107. This is also at the front desk of KPFA FM. If people want to call the receptionist there, it's 848-6767 in the 510 area code, and you push 0. And in addition, there is also a cookbook that Clara mentions. She also includes all of these addresses in her newsletter, and Clara's newsletter, actually you can pick it up in places in Berkeley. You can also subscribe to Clara Felix's newsletter by sending, which I don't think I'm really supposed to be giving out. Let's say you can send a note to Clara at P.O. Box 7094, Berkeley, California, 94707. I guess if I gave out the price of your book, I can give out subscriptions of $12 a year. But there's a cookbook there's, I hope I don't butcher his name, Chef Ujamaa?
Yes, uh-huh.
Chef Ujamaa has, he's a television cooking show man in Atlanta, Georgia, has produced a book called Back to Our Roots, Cooking for Control of Sickle Cell Anemia and Cancer Prevention. Oh, boy. Okay, and Chef Ujamaa, it's U-J-A-M-A-A, U-J-A-M-A-A. His address is 3955 Emerald North Circle, Emerald North Circle, Decanter, D-E-C-A-T-U-R-A, Georgia, Decanter, Georgia, 30035, 30035. Or you can just get Clara's newsletter. Okay. Now, do we even remember what we were talking about after all of that? I don't know.
Yes.
You had Lena, something you wanted to say.
Lena, yes. Yes, the book contains a diet plan. In other words, it has all information about a diet that has all the different food items that contain the high level of thiocyanate. Also, it describes the research, the whole thing, the whole basis for using this nutritional approach. It describes the research that we conducted to uncover the anti-sickling activity of thiocyanate. It has the pictures of the cells before treatment and after treatment. That's electron micrographs.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you get this book, you have everything. You have all the information you need to know about how the study was done, the results of the study, the case studies, the diets. And it's so dramatic in terms of how the cells are transformed from sickled to unsickled just by changing the diet to one that contains thiocyanate. Also, she mentioned, we mentioned previously about a concentrate, in other words, a supplement that goes along with the diet. We call it diet covite, which goes along with the diet. So you can get both of them from the Natural Health Research Institute.
Is there, you don't have a phone number, you just have the address, right?
Oh, yeah, they can call two numbers, 918-627-7997.
And leave a message for you there?
And leave a message, yeah, 918-627-7997. Okay. Also, there's another number, 918-583-3842. 918-583-3842.
Okay. I read the book, and I was reading about the diet, and I just wanted to clarify something, because you give out sort of some sample meals, and then you talk later about the importance of things like lemon juice and protein, you know, balancing the protein in the diet and all that kind of stuff. But in the sample meals, they look a little low in protein. They look like they're using mostly, well, they're high in thiocyanate foods, but is it your intention that people should add those foods to their protein meals?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so what's happening in the diet is that your sample diet is what should be added to a meal that has protein in it.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, got it.
Some people, and I have heard that comment also, people thought that it's a vegetarian diet.
Yes, looks like it, yeah.
It's not a vegetarian diet. It's not meant to be a vegetarian diet, because strict vegetarian is not recommended here, because you have to have adequate protein to be able to adequate animal protein to be able to get all your self-containing amino acids. So it's not at all vegetarian.
Well, I would think that vegetarians, if they were at, well, of course, I don't know, if someone's got sickle cell anemia, it may be that it's just not the best condition to try to be a vegetarian. But I would think that there are some sulfur-containing amino acids in eggs, less so in milk, so it would be hard. So, for instance, like you have a breakfast of buckwheat pancakes, sorghum, soy milk, peaches, and eggs.
Uh-huh.
But dinner just says African yam, mustard, greens, and carrot juice. You mean African yam, mustard, green, carrot juice, and a piece of meat.
Right.
Okay, gotcha.
Yes.
Okay. Now, where on earth are we going to get African yam? Where are we going to find? I know that there are certain places in Berkeley where you can sometimes get it, but it's not so easy to find. What is it called when it's in the stores in America?
It's called yam. They call it yam, but you find it in some of the international stores.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can get it in the African stores. You can get it in some Oriental stores. You know, the Oriental.
Yeah, no, and if you went to the Chinese section of a city, you could probably find it. But it wouldn't be called African yam. So what is it? So it looks like what? It looks like the base of a small tree or something? It has a kind of root-like quality.
Exactly. It's roots. One thing you need to ask the store manager, because they just in places where we buy here in Tulsa, Oklahoma, they just write yam on it.
Uh-huh.
Yam, but of course, having seen the American yam, you know that that's not what it is.
Nope.
Yeah, so it'd be different. But I think it's good. It's a good idea to ask them specifically the tropical yam.
Tropical yam.
Tropical yam.
Okay, and how do you prepare it, Dr. Ogbe?
You prepare it just like you prepare the American yam, like the sweet potato. No, not the sweet potato, but the Irish potato.
Yeah.
In other words,
you boil it.
You can boil it, and then you can bake it. But don't throw away the water, because the water is, thiocyanate is very soluble in water. So if you throw away the water used in cooking it, you're wasting a whole lot of it. So you need to peel it lightly, because underneath the peel, there's a bunch of vitamins and minerals underneath that. So you cook it, and then, but don't make sure you don't throw away the water. It's so, so important.
Okay. I had these foods in the West Indies when I traveled in the West Indies, and what they did was they made these big stews with fish.
Yeah.
Which is also very, the omega-3 fats are very important, too, with all of this.
Uh-huh.
So they'd make a fish soup with the yams and the cassava and these roots together. And that's what I had for breakfast when I was there. And it, boy, was it amazing. I just felt good. Now, that brings up another issue, which is that there are other conditions that are helped by the addition of thiocyanate-containing foods, if you can tolerate them.
Exactly. That's very true. It lowers the blood pressure. It's very effective in lowering blood pressure. That is why way back in the 30s and 40s, they used to use thiocyanate to treat hypertension, to treat high blood pressure in America and in Europe. So it's a well-known hypotensive agent. It lowers the blood pressure. And the way it does it is to widen the blood vessel. That's the answer I gave to someone in Cleveland at the convention. Told him that it lowers the blood pressure by widening the blood vessels. So that is another thing it can be used for.
And it's a powerful antimicrobial substance also, which is interesting because we are seeing over and over again that these tropical foods contain things that prevent people from getting parasitic infections and microbes and things because of the tropical fats.
Exactly.
Like coconut oil contain lauric acid, which is also an antifungal and antiviral agent.
That is very true. And that is why in the book, on chapter 5, I'm looking at the book here, on chapter 5.
Yeah, I'm looking here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, chapter 5, page 40, it says infection control in sickle cell anemia. That is very true. Thiocyanate is antibacterial, antifungal. I mean, it destroys the bacteria, and that's why when they make a recommendation for using penicillin to treat pneumococcus or pneumonia, something like that, then actually with thiocyanate, it's not recommended to get the penicillin, because thiocyanate does a better job in controlling such kind of infection.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So
now you do you want to talk just a little bit about your feelings about these foods in relationship to cancer prevention and treatment?
Yes, that's another interesting area of study. We know that cancer rate, the rate we find cancer in Africa is very, very rare. In fact, I did not know anything about cancer until I came to America. So the reason, again, has to do with the diet, especially with cassava. Yam is excellent for sickle cell anemia, but cassava, sorghum, and millet, they contain the compound, the nitrilocide, that is very effective in controlling cancer. So that is why you don't hear so much about cancer in Africa. Prostate cancer or any of other kinds of cancer is very, very rare compared to what we find here in America. So it has to do with the diet, because the component of the diet is very toxic to cancer cells, because the cancer cells lack an enzyme that is necessary to metabolize them. And so because of that, they specifically die when you eat such kind of food. So your body is being screened for cancer cells when you eat such foods like the cassava, the millet, the sorghum. And, of course, in America, carrots, cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, things like that contain the same thing. So
do they contain it in lesser degrees?
In lesser degree, in lesser concentration.
But if you're eating a lot of vegetables, you're going to get it. You're going to get those protective things. And it's interesting, too, because, the coal products that you mentioned, cabbage and broccoli and cauliflower, when they're eaten raw, have an inhibitory effect on the thyroid as well. So the only caution here would be that if your thyroid is sluggish, you want to probably cook these foods and make sure that you're eating a significant amount, you know, eating enough protein so that you're balancing the effects. And we eat enough iodine in this country. People are slathered with iodine. So it sounds like the only caution is if you do these things in excess and there's too much thyroid stuff going on. But as a protective measure, just using these very complex carbohydrates that are vegetable-based, again, it's very much like the Paleolithic diet, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned it correctly. In using these foods, you need iodized salt. And you need adequate protein that will give you the necessary protection against any kind of adverse side effects.
The other thing that's interesting is that, as we've mentioned before, people of African descent, as well as Indians and other groups, American Indians and Eastern Indians, are very susceptible to diabetes. So you're looking at foods that are less likely to raise insulin levels, and that might be part of the reason they're protective from cancer as well, I think. Is they keep your insulin levels more balanced rather than eating refined processed carbohydrates or irritating carbohydrates like wheat or even rice. Unfortunately, rice is pretty high, has a high glycemic index. I think the yams are lower.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's very true. And again, the mineral content is another important thing. So we know that diabetes is associated with chromium deficiency. And so in that case, it's very important to supplement, if you're handling a condition for diabetes, it's very important to supplement your diet with chromium supplements.
Mm-hmm.
And so as far as using this starch, in other words, the yam, well, the most important thing really in case of diabetes is to avoid all the junk foods.
Mostly, yes.
Yeah, you should avoid all the junk foods which are toxic to the pancreas, and so avoid those and be able to eat a well-balanced diet and avoid excessive sugar. Of course, we know that sugar itself causes diabetes.
And refined carbohydrates.
Carbohydrates,
as well.
And you shouldn't be drinking things like Coke and Sprite because those things are loaded with a bunch of sugar, and so those overwhelm the pancreas and they destroy the cells that make insulin.
Now, you also outline in your book that there are several other forms of anemia which are caused by nutritional deficiencies, and you go over those in the book as well,
yes.
Just in case people are missing the point that this information has been around.
Right. We talk about folic acid deficiency, of course, which, folic acid comes from green leafy vegetables. We talked about also vitamin B6 deficiency anemia, and
Vitamin B6 anemia is very hard to catch because it mimics other things.
Microcytic hypochromic. It's very much like iron deficiency anemia.
Right, and that's exactly the wrong thing to give someone with a B6 deficiency is more iron.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So in that case, vitamin B6 is so important. It's the first enzyme necessary for the formation of hemoglobin itself. So it's critically important to have adequate vitamin B6. And like Lena said, that it is very much, you have a condition that is, it mimics iron deficiency. And in most cases, it has been misdiagnosed as iron deficiency, when actually it's a vitamin B6 deficiency. So in that case, it's very, very important to be able to recognize the true condition and supplement your diet with vitamin B6, and you need about 25 to 30 milligrams a day. And that should adults need 50 milligrams a day, but the teenagers will need about 25 to 30 milligrams a day, and then children will need 10 to 20 milligrams a day. of vitamin B6 to supplement your diet.
And vitamin B6, we've just learned, too, is one of the main things that, if it's lacking, it predisposes people to having high homocysteine levels, which causes osteosclerotic plaquing and heart disease instead of cholesterol. Now we're learning that it's another vitamin deficiency that's causing these people to have heart attacks, not so much the cholesterol. And vitamin B6 and folic acid and trimethylglycine are the things that are lacking. And vitamin B6, of course, is processed out of flour. When flour is made, from these grains, if you eat whole grains like steel-cut oats, or you're eating whole foods, you have a fighting chance of getting some B6 in there. But they're processed out of foods, when they're made into flours and various things like that. So we're back to whole native foods over and over again. It's like a broken record, but it's so important. We see it over and over again. So what are you working on now? What are you putting a lot of attention into the cancer research now?
Well, mostly the sickle cell research is still our primary research in this area, but it's just a matter of trying to publish and to make people aware of what we have, because you can be sitting on a gold mine, and if people are not aware of what you have to help them, then what you have doesn't really matter. So we're trying to find a way to make people aware of the fact that this non-invasive and inexpensive and very safe method for controlling sickle cell anemia is here. When you compare it with blood transfusion, which is very risky and people can get AIDS from it, they can get hepatitis from it. When you compare the nutrition, that this is the safest approach in controlling this condition. And of course, things like bone marrow transplant and things like that are very expensive and very risky procedures. So we're trying to educate people to the fact that the nutritional approach is the way to go, and it's the way that God has already provided for the solution of sickle cell anemia problem. And so what we're doing at this point is merely an attempt to trying to educate the public about what we have.
Let's just hope the pharmaceutical companies don't get wind of this and start patenting a slightly molecularly altered version of thiocyanate to people. I would think that unless people are getting it in a whole natural form with all of the enzymes in it, that it may be less effective if it's made into a pharmaceutical.
Right.
Don't you think?
That's very true.
That would be the concern, is that suddenly it's you can't patent a natural substance. They get hold of this and they slightly change it. I would think it's back to the food source because of the enzymes and coenzymes that exist in foods.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Well, again, if people want to get hold of the book, which is called Sickle Cell Anemia, A Solution at Last, by Dr. Oji Agbe, Agbai, if you want to directly, you can leave a message at his two office numbers. It's 918-627-7997 or 918-583-3842 for Dr. Agbai and his book. There's also the cookbook from Dr. Ujamaa, and that is you send a letter directly to them. Ujamaa is Ujamaa, 3955 Emerald North Circle, Decanter, Georgia, 30035. That's for a cookbook about how to cook with these high thiocyanate foods. It's called Back to Our Roots, Cooking for Control of Sickle Cell Anemia and Cancer Prevention. You've been so generous with your time, and I'm so grateful to you for the work you're doing and the fight you're fighting on behalf of people who have been really lost in the cracks of this medical establishment that isn't looking at nutritional influences. Please keep up the good work and keep me posted on what you're doing so we can put you back on if something new breaks.
Thank you, Lena. And before I go, I need to mention about a very important article that was published way back in 1974 by the NIH researchers, where they were looking at different agents that will stop the sickling process, that will inhibit sickling. And they listed numerous things, but they mentioned finally that iodine and thiocyanate In fact, thiocyanate, which is found, of course, found in the yam and cassava and the lima beans and things like that,
millet, yeah.
is the most potent, is the best anti-sickling agent in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an article published way back in 1974 by the NIH.
Yeah, it's not like nobody knew about it.
It had been known all this time. But yeah. The good news is that this is found in the food, the food that is described in the book we're talking about here, Sickle Cell Anemia, A Solution at Last. So thiocyanate has been proven to be the best anti-sickling agent in the whole world.
Well, there's going to be a rush on the produce stores when we get off the air.
Oh, okay.
People are going to go out and buy these things, so it'll be good.
Yes. They need to get educated in the book.
Yeah.
You know, back
okay.
in the book for us.
All right.
That will provide them with all the necessary information to heal themselves.
Okay. Well, they have the information now. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Ojiagbe, thank you again.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'm Lena Berman. And I want to thank you for listening. If you need more information or want a cassette copy of this or any other in the series Your Own Health and Fitness, you can call my information number 24 hours a day at 707-874-2772. For a list of other available shows, information about guests and news about the nonprofit and the benefits of membership, and to listen to the show free online, go to the website yourownhealthandfitness.org. Your Own Health and Fitness is a joint production of Your Own Health and Fitness and KPFA-FM. The engineer for Your Own Health and Fitness is Vinnie Beecham. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.